Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. As we come to this story of the 12 spies, Israel, at this point in history, has already been miraculously delivered from Egyptian bondage. They have already experienced a military victory over the Amalekites. These slaves came out in their first battle. By God's providence, they were able to win. They camped for a period of time at Mount Sinai. There they received the law. And then, according to the instructions of God, they began that northward journey. It wasn't a long journey, up to the southern borders of the land of Canaan. And there they were to receive the promise of God, the promised land. Remember back when God first spoke to Abraham, and God said to Abraham, I'm going to make of you a great nation. And he led him out under the stars and said, look up, can you count those stars? That's how many descendants you will have. He said, I'll make of you a great nation. He said, I will give to you a great land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the third part of the promise was that through your descendant, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. God had already blessed them with the first part of that promise. They had grown into a great nation, and now God was ready to honor the second part of that promise, to give them a great land. So here they were, and they were at a pivotal juncture in their history. It was like what happened in those days of World War II, when all the troops had been gathered there in England, and when all of the launches and all of the ships were ready to cross that channel on D-Day, and they were going into a new land to take that new land there in France and begin the push that would ultimately end in victory. And so here the Israelites are, and they're all congregated on the southern border of the promised land. They're ready to cross over into the land and win the victory that God has promised them. But before they did that, they were asked to make a reconnaissance run into the land. And they were asked for 12 men, one representative from each of the tribes, to be that person that would go in, and they would spy out the land, come back with their report, and then Israel would cross over to the victory. Read with me again, or here at the beginning, actually, of Numbers chapter 13, the first three verses. The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So, at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. Now, these weren't just ordinary men. These were the ones that all of Israel looked to for leadership. Just behind Moses and Aaron, you had these 12 men. These were the men who had the respect of Israel. These were men who had lived their lives honorably and faithfully before God. They had credibility with the people. And so you have these wonderful leaders who go out to check out the land. Now, all this was happening because of the earlier promise of God. Way back, years before, it's recorded in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 24, God had said, you will possess their land, talking about all these nations of Canaan. God said, I will give it to you as an inheritance, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God who has set you apart from the nations. A rock solid promise of God to the Israelites. The promise that he gave originally to Abraham. And God had made many promises to the Israelites, and he had always, always been faithful in keeping those promises. He told them that the plagues would be brought down upon the Egyptians because of Pharaoh's hard-heartedness. And they watched one after the other come true just exactly as God had said would happen through Moses. God had promised deliverance, and there at the Red Sea, God with his mighty hand had parted the waters and led them across on dry land, and God had honored that promise. He said, I will take care of you, and they were sustained Even though they were in the middle of the desert, they saw water come from a rock. They saw manna fall from heaven. Even quail on occasion fell and they were fed. And so God sustained them just as He had promised. And now this promise is ready to be fulfilled, the land that God had promised as their inheritance. Well, these 12 men were selected and they were ready to go. Look in verse 4. See how many of these names you recognize. There in verse 4, it lists their names. Of the tribe of Reuben, Shammu. Of the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat. Of the tribe of Judah, Caleb. Of the tribe of Issachar, Egal. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea. His name was changed to Joshua. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Palti. Of the tribe of Zebulun, Gadel. Of the tribe of Manasseh, Gadai. Of the tribe of Dan, Amiel. Of the tribe of Asher, Sether. Of the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi. And of the tribe of Gad, Guel. Now, how many of those names are you familiar with? Well, we've heard of Caleb, haven't we? We've heard of Joshua, haven't we? And only one other name I recognize there, and that was Shamu. But I think he's a whale at SeaWorld. I don't know any of the 10. Don't remember their names. They were the 10 who said, "No, we can't take the land." Joshua and Caleb alone said, "With God's help, by His promise and by His strength, we can gain the victory that He's given to us." 12 names, the very best in leadership that each tribe could produce. If we were to look at them and compare them with that D-Day generation in our nation, we would go back in time and we would say, those 12 men were part of the greatest generation within Israel. That was the generation who had seen and experienced more miracles than any generation that had ever been on the face of the earth. They had walked through the Red Sea, having experienced the plagues that fell upon Egypt. They had experienced victory over the Amalekites. Here they were, a bunch of slaves, and they were fighting an experienced group of armed men. And remember in that battle how God said, "Moses, all you have to do is keep your rod up." And it took Hur and Aaron on both sides of him to hold his weary arms up. And as long as his arms were held up, God gave the victory, and the victory came. Not because they were experienced soldiers, they weren't. But God miraculously gave them that victory. They drank water from the rock. They ate manna from heaven. They had seen the wonders at Mount Sinai as that mountain shook and quaked and fire from above came down upon it. And they had seen Moses come down with those tables of stone. And with their own ears, they had heard Moses read the law. No nation had ever been so blessed by the miraculous manifestation of God. And now they're about to receive the culmination of God's promise for their day, and that is the land that God has promised. Look in verse 17 of chapter 13. Moses made this request of them as he sends them out. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, "Go up through the Negev into the hill country and see what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land." It was the season for the first ripe grapes. Same season of the year that we're experiencing right now, probably July, when they went up into that land as the grapes were ripening. Now, they went up into the land and they explored the land, and it was exactly as God had said it would be. There in verse 21, it says, they went up and they explored from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Lebo Hamath. They went all the way up. They saw all the tribes of the people that were there, just as God said they would be. It says in verse 23, when they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. And at the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. You know, God had told them everything they would see years in advance. Back in Exodus chapter 3, that was the burning bush experience before Moses ever went in to help deliver the Israelites out of their years of bondage. And God said then, I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. All those years ago, God said, you're going to go into that land, and when you do, you're going to find all these nations. And it's going to be a wonderful land of bounty and fruitfulness. They went up there, and it was exactly as God had said. They found every one of those tribes. They found all the bounty that God had promised. And can you imagine the excitement that day at the end of 40 days when all these leaders, these men who were esteemed and loved by Israel, when they came back and they weren't coming back empty-handed? Can you imagine the excitement of the children when they begin to run through the camp and say, here they are, they're coming back. And they all rushed out and they saw those grapes and they saw the baskets of figs and the pomegranates, all the bounty that the land produced just as God had said it would. And it's hard to believe what 10 of those 12 men did at that point. And it's hard to believe what that one group of 10 people did by way of effect throughout the entire nation of Israel. In Numbers 13:26, we read the report. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is the fruit. But, and the whole tone changed with that one small word. But, they said, the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites. God had already told them that all these people were there. They come back, and rather than saying, it's just like God said, they reported as if it's a bad thing. Caleb spoke up in verse 30, but it wasn't enough. Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we can't. We can't. We can't attack the people. They're stronger. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there of great size, we saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. Well, what a discouraging report to come back with. They said, we're just like a bunch of grasshoppers. They're big and they're strong, and they've got these walled cities. There's no way we can fight against them and hope to win. But you know what the truth was? The truth was that the people in the land, all those Canaanites, the Jebusites and the Hivites and all those other tribal groups that were there in the land, they were in reality terrified of the Israelites. They were quaking in their boots. They knew that they had congregated on the southern border there of the land of Canaan. They knew that they intended to come up into the land, and they were terrified because news had gone out in advance of all that had happened down in Egypt. They knew about them crossing over on dry land through the Red Sea. Why, even 40 years later, see, they weren't going to be allowed to go in here because of this lack of faith. It would be 40 years later that they would be allowed to go in, and they wouldn't go in through the southern route. They would go in around from the eastern side, and they would cross over the Jordan and hit Jericho for the first time. And Rahab there, and 40 years later, they were still afraid of the Israelites. All those years they were going in circles in the wilderness, they were afraid of them because they knew how powerful God was. In Joshua chapter 2, Rahab would tell those spies when they finally would go in, she said, "A great fear of you has fallen on all of us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came up out of Egypt." That land was ripe for the picking. Those people were terrified of the Israelites. All they had to do was cross the border, and God would have given them city after city after city. Within just a few days, they would be living in houses that weren't their own. They would be eating grapes that they hadn't even planted, because God was going to give it all to them. It was a gift. But that negativity that those 10 men brought back spread a fear like a contagion among all of Israel. In chapter 14, look what it says. "That night all the people of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, 'If only we had died in Egypt or in this desert. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?' And they said to each other, 'We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt.'" Is it any wonder that when we read the New Testament, that fear is listed as one of the sins that will keep individuals out of heaven? That's what it says in Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. "The fearful will be cast out." Well, here they were, the greatest generation of Israel, standing on the threshold of glory. But instead of this greatest generation being remembered for what they accomplished, they are forever recorded here in God's Word as the generation who failed to trust God at the crunch time. And instead, they're remembered for populating the largest cemetery that exists anywhere in the Middle East. Out there, there are millions of unfaithful Jews buried out in that wilderness area because God said this whole generation is going to die. Only the young people will eventually cross over into the Promised Land. And they did. They all died over a 40-year period and were buried. They had funerals every day. Now, I've used this story to talk about really what we're doing here at Sunset and what's about to happen at Willard. For the third time, we as a congregation here at Sunset have come to this place when we're about to step out in faith. It won't be long before we'll be seeing a group leave this congregation that will comprise in part the Jackson Street Church of Christ in the community of Willard. They've already begun meeting on Sunday nights in the community center. They've already found a facility that's going to serve as a temporary meeting place for all of their Sunday meetings. And that's in part why we passed this card out, because we need to know, the elders need to know, for planning purposes, obviously, who's going and who's staying. But more than that, we need help right now. And I'll just say to you very honestly, in this congregation, we are shorthanded at times. And the things that are listed on this card are the areas where we most crucially need some help. And anytime we're about to take a step of faith like this, it's going to require us to adopt an all-hands-on-deck mentality. Those who are going out are going to have to be multitasking in that new congregation. There are going to be holes left here, and we're going to need members here to step up to bat and to do things maybe that they've not done before. And so I ask you, if you've already marked those places on your card, before you pass them in a little bit later, I would ask you to look at them again. I mean, this church is always, has always been a giving congregation, and you've always responded. And so I ask you again at this time of need to look again and maybe challenge yourself. If there's something that you've not done before, step out a little bit. Go beyond your comfort zone and do some things that are needed that perhaps you've not done before. You know, it was fear that paralyzed Israel. And fear is the same enemy, I believe, that every generation of God's people fight. We're afraid to take a step of faith. It's seen in major areas of faith. It's seen in small areas. I know some people are afraid of making commitments. Some people are afraid to do something that they've never done before. But fear always paralyzes. Those people that we just read about were so fearful that they were prepared to walk back all the way they'd come and to go back into Egypt and put their hands out and say, "Put us back in chains." They were that fearful. And I think today there are people who at times of challenge want to go back and say, "You know, we liked it better the way it was before we were challenged and before anyone rocked the boat and before we did all these things that required steps of faith. And we just like to have things peaceful and quiet and just go along and get along and do that." Well, let me just remind you, this congregation is not a final destination. This is not a place just to come and to be saved and just to sit and retire and enjoy. That's not God's purpose. God has given us a mission as Christians. This church is a beachhead. It's not the final destination. This church is a foxhole. It's not where we're going to end up. And there will always be another hilltop to get over. And there will always be new territory to conquer in the kingdom of God. You know, those Israelites little realized how much was at stake on that occasion. If they had known what would be written for all future generations to read, I just wonder if they might have reacted differently. I'm grateful. I'm so grateful for what God has called us to. I'm grateful that we have faithful leaders in this congregation who have not shirked and they've not turned back and they've not spread bad reports. They have carried the flag forward and they've said, "We are going to go, and it's going to be hard and it's going to require sacrifice, but we're going to go and we're going to do that." And this congregation has followed that kind of leadership each time they've been challenged. And I know you'll do it again. So in one way, this is a small thing we're asking today. But in another way, it's a very crucial thing that we're asking. That the congregation step forward and fill in the needed areas and allow us as a whole to be able to move forward to the next challenge that God places before us. I'll tell you right now, there is nothing any greater in life than to be part of something that is larger than any of us are. And to be part of a kingdom enterprise like this is something that makes life worth living. It makes getting out of bed in the morning worthwhile. And so I want to say as we close, if you're not part of God's kingdom, if you're not involved in something that's exciting and that's so much bigger than any one of us, we're going to sing an invitation. And if you have been contemplating and you're thinking about giving your life to Jesus, I tell you, He'll give you a life that's so worthwhile. If you're here today and you need prayer in your journey down the road, we all face discouragement and we all face hardships. We'll pray for you. Our goal is to move on beyond this current beachhead that we call the Sunset Church of Christ or the Jackson Street Church of Christ. Our goal is to get into the promised land one day, and that's heaven. That's our ultimate goal. That's our ultimate destination. If you need to take a step in your own life to make that a reality. We encourage you to do that as we stand and as we sing.